from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
What is it like to have a front row seat for virtually every event at the Vatican? But then, what is it like to cover, report, and explain these incredible and often complex moments in the life of the Church to an audience of millions across the whole world? That is what it's like to be an EWTN producer in Rome. This week on Register Radio, we talk with EWTN News Nightly's Rome producer, Mary Shevlin, a veteran of broadcasting and also the challenging world of the Vatican. Then I'm joined by Register film critic Stephen Graydonis to discuss the best films of 2016, and especially the movies Silence and Rogue One. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the National Catholic Register, senior contributor for EWTN, and co-host of Register Radio. I'm filling in as host for Register Editor-in-Chief Jeanette DeMello, who's scheduled to be back next week. Mary Shevlin is a veteran of television and broadcasting, but she's also trained in moral theology and Catholic social communications. That's a rather rare and valuable combination. And Mary, over the years, has put all of that training to good use for the Church, with Vatican Radio, and now for EWTN. Mary, welcome to Register Radio.
It is an honor to be with you, Mr. Bunsen, Dr. Bunsen.
The chance to talk to you is one of those rare opportunities because I know how hard you work and I know the complexity of your schedule in Rome. For those who hear your voice, see you, your face on EWTN News Nightly, first, who are you and how did you end up in Rome? You have a fascinating story.
Well, I went over to study theology. I went to the Franciscan University of Steubenville. Well, first of all, I went to the University of Alabama, so Roll Tide. Anyway, so then I went to Steubenville and just this great love of theology, which remained, and I went for graduate studies in Rome.
At the Angelicum, right?
At the Angelicum.
And
then
University of St. Thomas Aquinas.
Esatto. I responded in Italian. But I did the licentiate part of the moral theology degree at Santa Croce in Rome, the Holy Cross University in Rome. So that was a lovely experience. But while I was studying, Matthew, I needed to pay the bills, and so Vatican Radio needed people who were bilingual, knew a little something about the faith, and a friend of mine that worked there was leaving. I said, well, okay, I'll just, you know, apply. That could work out with my schedule and so on. And as I began to work there, it was just an immediate love of communications and the Vatican, of course. All of that came together, and I often tell people, I was like, I can't believe this is a job. You get paid to do this. This is a real thing. But that's when you know you found your life's calling, so to speak, and it just resonated with every fiber of my being. And so I finished my degree, of course, in moral theology. And I finished my time at Vatican Radio, did the Jubilee of 2000. We were live 16 hours a day, I think, with that Jubilee, talking to everyone who came through Rome. It was just amazing. In the pontificate of John Paul II, so you can imagine.
Something he'd been building up to years.
Exactly. This was towards the end of his pontificate. Remember all that buildup?
Yeah.
Towards the Jubilee, the millennium. And he really focused the Church, 3 years of preparation, one on the Father, one on the Son, one on the Holy Spirit. And that really just came to bear on that Jubilee. So much fruit was born. And then about 2002, I wanted to come back and work with EWTN. I wanted to go from radio to TV to see what that was like. And so I worked in Birmingham at the Mother House, let's say, you know, for EWTN. For about a year, and I got to meet Mother Angelica during that time. And I had already been over when I was a student at Alabama to watch a taping of Mother Angelica live. I was sitting in the audience, but I didn't get to meet her. So as an employee, I thought, okay, this is my chance. But I didn't know what to expect. And, you know, in Rome, I had already met John Paul II, now Saint John Paul II. I had met Mother Teresa twice, Saint Mother Teresa now. Yeah. And I was going to meet the Mother Angelica. I had no idea what to expect. And I was blown away, Matthew, by her holiness. And I often say the holiness of Mother Angelica, in my opinion, I don't know her as well as Raymond Arroyo or the other people at EWTN, but I think it comes from a holiness that comes from great suffering. We know she suffered a lot physically from her physical ailments, and that usually is coupled with a deep spiritual suffering. And we know that, you know, she had a life out of the public eye for several years towards the end of her life. So just meeting her, that's what blew me away. This holiness. I couldn't even speak. Like, I shook her hand and turned around and walked away. You know? I didn't even say thanks, Mother, for this wonderful job. So,
You being rendered speechless.
Right. It's not a good thing for a communicator.
Certainly not for radio.
No.
But the experience of Mother Angelica, the experience of working with EWTN, and then you find yourself back in Rome.
Yeah. I went back. You know what I noticed is that for the world's largest religious media outlet, they didn't have a lot coming from Rome / Europe, even. Mm-hmm. They did have people they were working with, of course. But so I said, you know, I'm going to go back. I had to finish writing my thesis anyway. And I said, you know, I'll just work as a freelancer and let's see what we can do together. Why not? My goal was to bring people the faith, the church, the Vatican, what we all love so much and what we're all blown away by when we go visit the Vatican. I said, people need to see more of this in whatever way we can. So, and then that turned into some series that we did together on art. We did a series from the Holy Land. We did a series from Ireland, you know, 10-part series usually, an exclusive series in the Vatican Museum, which the Vatican Museums had never done before, our salvation history as seen in the art of the Vatican Museum. So a lot of feature things. And then News Nightly began, and we have a Rome office now for EWTN, and they needed just someone who was a dedicated producer in Rome just for News Nightly, because the Rome office, they're doing a million things. Catholic News Agency, all of their language editions, the weekly show Vaticano, which they produce from Rome. And so my role is just to focus on News Nightly, and I love it. Love every bit of it.
Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matthew Bunsen, talking today with EWTN News Nightly's Rome producer, Mary Shevlin. So you've had a chance to cover three different pontificates. We have the titan of John Paul II. We had the clarity and gentleness of Benedict XVI. And now we have the tussle of Francis. What is it like to present, to cover Pope Francis? Because I have the impression that one of the things that's important to you is being able to help the modern world, the average person, to understand the faith and what's going on in Rome.
Yeah, and I think it's an exciting time to be what we call a Vaticanista, which is a Vatican-focused journalist, because, like you said, John Paul, I kind of grew up professionally during his pontificate, let's say. So that was more of a learning curve. Mm-hmm. And he was easy to explain, let's say, you know, the Catholic teaching. And then Benedict, of course, was his natural successor. And so there's a lot of continuation of thought. And Pope Francis, thank God, you know, I had the years of experience under my belt, because here comes this earthquake of Pope Francis. By earthquake, I mean, you know, we had years of John Paul, years of Benedict, and they're very similar, very different. Even their styles or their ways of speaking were very similar. He's from Argentina, you know, doesn't stop. He just turned 80, and he's outpacing me every day. Mm-hmm. He's got one full functioning lung and just part of another. He's, you know, you see him, he limps a little bit, and I don't know why. I'm not saying I know that he has a condition in his leg, but you could tell it's not easy for this 80-year-old man to right. to globetrot and visit and embrace.
And to be the universal shepherd of a billion souls.
Amen. Right. Nobody, that would be just daunting. And that's why he's always asking for our prayers, right?
Right.
Please pray for me. So like you say, yes, I think just some of the new ways of speaking maybe, or explaining church teaching, or kind of turning some of these classic ways of thinking on their head. I think the folks at home, it's good for them to have voices in Rome, isn't it, too? Whether it's through the written articles of Catholic News Agency or News Nightly or however we're giving you this information, just to flesh it out. It's a great way. Like, if people are confused, it's a great time to say, wait, well, what is this teaching, isn't it? Like, if he's challenging us in some areas, it's a great way for us to kind of go back to basics and realize what it is that we teach on certain things. I mean, he is changing some things, isn't he? I mean, it's... You know, nothing in terms of doctrine,
right.
But just he's challenging us. And for me, as a Catholic who's in the pews, so to speak, the choir, part of the, you know, when you say preaching to the choir, but if when I feel challenged or uncomfortable, am I doing enough? Am I helping the poor enough? Why don't I go into the local prison for a little bit of ministry? You know, that's good right. that he's making even folks in the pews a little uncomfortable about stuff like that.
And the imagery of the field hospital, but also the yeah. imagery of the peripheries.
Yes, the peripheries. And he's been going to those peripheries. And he hasn't even been home to his native Argentina yet. Mm-hmm. And his first trips have symbolically been, even in within Italy, he went right down to Lampedusa, which is where all the migrants have been coming in.
Yeah.
And he's made the whole world, I think, more sensitive to the plight of migrants. And we say, well, haven't we always been? Yes, the church has always been on the front lines of welcoming the migrants. But he's made us really aware of it. He doesn't let it go to the back of our brain, like, oh, yeah, the migrants is something we should be worried about. Because we haven't seen displacement like this, Matthew, since World War II. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pushed me out to go interview more experts, people in the field. And that's a good thing, because now I realize as a journalist, this is historic, what we're living through.
So it's really been an opportunity of growth for you, too,
mm-hmm.
Spiritually, professionally. And do you see this, too, as an opportunity in the brief time we have left for the church to reach out in a way that really the Second Vatican Council wanted us to do in having that dialogue with the modern world?
Yeah, I think he is standing on the shoulders of his predecessors, because this is something that has been coming since Vatican II, which the focus of that, as you said, was the church in dialogue with the modern world. And Francis is propelling us in such a way that I wasn't expecting or prepared for, I have to say. But it's been fascinating, keeping us on our toes. And I'm excited for what this year is going to bring. And in March, it will be 4 years of this papacy.
Right.
And the church is finding new terms, new partners for dialogue. We've seen a lot of new people coming through Vatican doors, the heads of technology, for example, Google, Facebook, mm-hmm. Amazon. And the Holy Father, you talk about dialoguing with the modern world. I mean, the UN. I mean, he's not afraid to speak truth to power a little bit. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, and you cover all of this for News Nightly.
Yes.
And what's coming up for Francis?
Well, this week he's going to meet with the victims of the earthquakes. You remember the earthquakes that devastated central Italy this summer. So it's people really that have lost loved ones. It's people who are still displaced. And that's been something very dear to his heart. Pope Francis has been there to that area, and we covered that as well. And it's just a time for comfort, and I think it's part of that revolution of tenderness. He's just meeting with them, not to give them financial aid, just to comfort them, mm-hmm. because they're still without a home. Their loved ones are still, of course, passed away, and there may be difficult to look towards the future with hope, isn't it? And he's just meeting with them to give them a little hope. And that's on the eve of the Epiphany Mass, which he will celebrate on Friday. And then this Sunday, he will have the Mass with baptisms in the Sistine Chapel.
Right. Well, and you'll be there, and look forward to seeing you. Mary, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, when I come back, I'm joined by the Register's film critic Stephen Greidanis to talk about the best movies of 2016 and the controversial movie Silence. And maybe we'll talk some Star Wars, too. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the National Catholic Register and senior contributor for EWTN. 2016 produced some pretty remarkable films, as well as some absolute box office disasters. My next guest has pretty much seen all of them, and he's written about them too. Stephen Greidanis is the Register's much-loved film critic. He is also a permanent deacon and a very popular blogger. He can be found at decentfilms.com. Stephen, welcome back to Register Radio.
Matthew, always good to be here.
This has been one of the more interesting years, I think, from the standpoint of film, because there have been so many pretty good films that you've written about, a lot of them. But is it my imagination, or have there just been a lot of really terrible films this last year?
Well, I like to say every year is a good year for film if you know where to look. But some years you have to look further afield than others. This has been a terrible year for Hollywood films in general, unless – The only working strategy at the movies this year for Hollywood was be Disney. That was the only strategy that worked. Disney had 6 of the top 10 films of the year. None of the other companies did extremely well. And then there were some huge films that just crashed and burned.
What would, in your view, be the biggest sort of disaster, not necessarily financially, but artistically?
Well, actually, one of the films that immediately comes to mind is both. And it's both a financial and an artistic disaster. It's also a film that falls in squarely in the middle of this year's enormous crop of religiously themed films. I've never, in my 16 years of doing this job, I've never seen a year so chock full of films with religious themes as 2016. But the remake of Ben-Hur was just an absolute disaster. It completely botched what was special about all previous versions of the story. It did not connect with viewers at all, either secular or religious. The presence of Roma Downey and Mark Burnett on the producing team did not bring out the religious crowd, and it just didn't work on any level.
Yeah, and my worry about Ben-Hur being such a flop was that it's the kind of thing that it's so terrible that it might discourage studios from actually producing really good, high-quality religious films.
That's true, and unfortunately, some of the year's other interesting religious films also didn't connect at the box office in the way that I had hoped that they would. This has been an amazing year for Jesus on the big screen. Of course, he was on screen in Ben-Hur. He was on screen in the post-resurrection drama Risen. Ewan McGregor played both Jesus and the devil in the indie drama Last Days in the Desert. My favorite Jesus film was somewhat controversial among Catholics. It was The Young Messiah, based on the novel by Anne Rice, Christ the Lord Out of Egypt. Despite some questions about how Jesus' human consciousness is portrayed in that film, I thought that it did a really interesting job of blending biblical and extra-canonical material in a way that I thought was really reflective of Catholic imagination, but it also didn't do well at the box office.
Mm-hmm. And then there's Silence, that seemed to be perched to win all sorts of awards and accolades, and yet, dare one say, pun intended, silence has followed.
Well, it's going to be opening at the box office a little wider now in January, and we'll see how well it does with audiences. I've heard from a lot of my readers who are very excited and interested to see it. I've also heard from a lot of people who are really turned off and upset about one of the key plot points in the story, which of course comes from the original novel by Shusaku Endo, who was a Japanese Catholic.
Right. And the book itself has an ending that, to put it politely, is rather controversial. So it stands to reason that someone like Scorsese is going to really zero in on that.
Well, Scorsese first read the novel in 1989, shortly after releasing The Last Temptation of Christ. It was given to him by an Episcopalian priest, and he read it while he was in Japan. He was fascinated, and he's been trying to bring it to the screen ever since. Shusaku Endo is a really interesting character, 20th century Japanese Catholic novelist, one of Japan's greatest novelists, and a man who really felt that he didn't have a cultural homeland, because as a Catholic he wasn't accepted in Japan, he was persecuted, but abroad in Europe he faced persecution for being Japanese. And the novel is in many ways a plea for rethinking the question of how the gospel is enculturated when it comes to a new land. What does it mean to be Japanese and Catholic as opposed to being European and Catholic? And did the 17th century Jesuit missionaries to Japan appreciate that? Did the shoguns and the leaders of Japan who were persecuting the Christians, were they even open to the question?
Mm-hmm. And then there's a film I know that you really like, and that's Hacksaw Ridge, which seemingly would not have a religious theme, and yet it's really quite filled with a religious element.
Oh, sure. Silence and Hacksaw Ridge have a number of things in common, in fact. They're both by Catholic directors, Martin Scorsese for Silence and Mel Gibson for Hacksaw Ridge. They both star Andrew Garfield as explicitly Christian characters whose faith is put to an enormous trial by great physical suffering that's inflicted by the Japanese in both cases. Hacksaw Ridge, they're both based on true stories, too. Hacksaw Ridge is based on the story of Desmond Doss, the first U.S. Medal of Honor recipient who was a conscientious objector. He was a Seventh-day Adventist, and he wanted to serve in World War II, but he refused to carry a weapon. He wanted to be a medic. He was really scorned and somewhat persecuted by his own men, but in the Battle of Okinawa, he proved himself to be enormously brave and is credited with saving 75 lives single-handedly. So an amazing story.
Mm-hmm. And something really that hopefully will do well in award season.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matthew Bunsen, continuing my conversation with Register film critic Stephen Gradanis about the best and some of not the best films of 2016. So when we look at family films, it struck me that this was probably a pretty good year. I'm thinking especially of a film I know that you were very high on, The BFG, right?
The BFG is one of a number of remarkable, not animated, I can't quite say live action because there's a lot of computer imagery in them, but you wouldn't call them traditionally animated, family films in 2016. The other standouts were Jon Favreau's The Jungle Book, and what is probably my favorite, Disney's remake of Pete's Dragon. Also worth noting is A Monster Calls, which has a similar relationship between a human child and a giant CGI creature. It's not really a family film per se, but mm-hmm. it deals with childhood grief and loss, which is also at the center of a number of these other films. But I did really enjoy The BFG. I thought that Steven Spielberg brought a wonderful reality to the relationship between this little girl, Sophie, and the giant played by Mark Rylance. And there's a lot of emotion in the film. I think that it's credited partly to Spielberg and also partly to Melissa Matheson, who wrote the screenplay for E.T., and this was her final screenplay.
Mm. And Queen of Katwe, probably not a lot of attention. I can barely remember even hearing about it.
Queen of Katwe deserves a lot more attention than it's gotten. Literally every reader that I've heard from who saw it loved it, but so few people saw it. It's a movie that's so remarkable and improbable that when a story for it ran at ChristianityToday.com, the headline ran simply, Disney made a film about a Ugandan Christian female chess champion. It's based on the true story of Fiona Mutesi, an illiterate girl from a Ugandan slum who became an international chess champion thanks to a Christian missionary played by David Oyelowo, who was Martin Luther King Jr. in Selma. Oyelowo is a devout Christian himself, and he really brought his Christian conviction to the role of this missionary. He works with children in a sports program, and those who don't want to play sports, he teaches chess. There's a scene in the film where he prays with his children before one of their chess matches, and Oyelowo has said that he improvised that based on photographs of the missionary that he was playing, praying with the kids.
Mm. And then, of course, there were the blockbusters, and I have the sense that your favorite of all the blockbusters this year was Doctor Strange.
It's true. Scott Derrickson, also a Christian filmmaker, but really did something different in Doctor Strange than I've seen in any of the other Marvel movies to date. He cross-examines the character's materialistic atheism in an interesting way, mm-hmm. and he's created a visual spectacle that just doesn't look like any other superhero film that I've seen. I don't know if there's still any opportunity to catch it on the big screen or in 3D, but if you have that chance, absolutely avail yourself of it. This is the best argument this year, I think, for going to see movies in the theater rather than just waiting for home video, no matter how big your screen is at home.
Yeah, I saw it with the 3D, and it was pretty sumptuously shot. I was slightly jarred by Benedict Cumberbatch's otherwise perfect American accent, but hearing him speak with an American accent is always just slightly surprising.
It's a perfect bit of casting. It's probably the most perfect bit of Marvel casting since Robert Downey Jr. was cast as Iron Man back in 2008.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's Rogue One. And I need to ask everyone to go to ncregister.com and read your awesome piece discussing the Force and where Rogue One sort of fits into that whole universe, because I think it's very thought-provoking, especially for those of us who grew up with Star Wars. How's the response been to your review? Because I know you're not a huge fan of Rogue One, but also that article.
I'm not, and response has been very mixed, which I expected. People
yeah.
love Star Wars with a passion, and they don't like to hear someone ripping apart the latest installment. Everyone is enormously invested in Star Wars movies being great. Believe me, I feel that. I get it. But I also feel it's necessary to take the long run. And right now, I'm hearing from people who, when The Force Awakens opened last year, they said it's great, it's 4 stars, and they're much less high on it now. And that's the critic's job, is to anticipate how is the movie going to play in a year or two. And with Rogue One, although there's a lot of fan service, a lot to make the fans happy, and it dovetails very closely with the beginning of the original Star Wars film, A New Hope from 1977, there's a fundamental shift in the dynamics and in the moral universe of the story. The original Star Wars takes place in a very simplistic fairy tale, Hollywood movie kind of moral universe, black hats and white hats. It's like the old westerns. It's like World War II films. The Empire is wholly evil and the rebellion is wholly good. And what they give us here is something that's much more ambiguous. You know, it's the fog of war. We see rebels engaged in actions that look more like terrorism than freedom fighting. And we see the main rebel character, Cassian Andor, murder someone who was working with him in cold blood in the very first scene where we meet him. So this is not your father's rebellion, and while I think that there's room for asking larger moral questions about a simplistic story, when you're working in what's a canonical continuity, these stories are all supposed to take place in the same universe, and you're supposed to be able to watch the one and go right into the next. To go from that kind of fog of war story into fairy tale, that doesn't work for me. And what really bothers me is that we just aren't making movies anymore for children that have that kind of very simple, clear moral universe, that have characters who are simply role models.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but I look forward to your reviews in 2017. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Matthew.
Well, and thank you for joining me on Register Radio here on EWTN. For much more news, analysis, and commentary on the church and the major events of the day, remember to go to ncregister.com. For my producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.